Welcome to the Human Capital Innovations Podcast, your go-to source for personal, professional, and organizational growth and development. We hope you tune in often for all things people management, organizational development and change, organizational leadership, and social impact related. Maximize your personal and organizational potential with Human Capital Innovations Podcast. Welcome to the Human Capital Innovations Podcast. In this HCI Podcast episode, I talk with Craig Bissett about his book, My Worst Hire, and what I learned from it. Craig Bissett, welcome to the Human Capital Innovations Podcast.
Great to be here.
Appreciate yeah, it's great to be with you today. I'm super excited to talk with you. You're joining us from Toronto. I'm south of Salt Lake City in Utah. And today we're going to be talking about your new book, My Worst Hire and What I Learned from It. And along with that and dissecting that, pulling out some key lessons, we're going to be talking about your hiring simulation assessments that you also do as part of your work. So I'm really excited to dive on in and learn more about effective hiring and how we can go about, you know, it's really like one of those challenging art forms within organizations that most people do pretty darn poorly. And we certainly can do better. So we're going to get into that today. As we get started, I wanted to share Craig's bio with everybody. Craig Bissett is the author of My Worst Hire and What I Learned from It. He is the founder and president of Hire Results LTD and creator of the hiring simulation assessment process used by organizations throughout the world to experience candidates in action before making a hiring decision. Craig regularly advises hiring teams and senior management on strategies to avoid costly hiring decisions based on a candidate's ability to perform well in an interview. Prior to 2002, he managed and was an active partner in two national human capital firms. Craig speaks regularly at industry events on the topic of human capital and how hiring teams can manage the risk of a costly hire. Again, a super important topic. I'm super excited to have this conversation. Anything else you would like to add by way of your background, personal context before we dive on in?
No, I think you covered it. You didn't mention that I'm happily married for many years. That's probably the most important part, and great family. So those are dear to my heart, but the background on myself professionally is absolutely correct.
Wonderful, wonderful. All right, so let's dive on in. Talk a little bit about why you wrote your book, My Worst Hire and What I Learned from It, why you framed the title that way. And really, I imagine that plays into how you lay out the content of your book.
Yeah, John. So we have been running this company. I started 19 years ago. We work with companies all over North America. And the business that we're in, building hiring simulations, helping companies manage the risk when they're hiring people, we typically work with presidents, CEOs, senior professionals within the organization. And myself or our consultants, once we have built a good relationship up with these individuals, they're very open to talk to us about things going on in their organization. And it's not uncommon. John, over our business relationship for a senior partner director within the company to take us aside and say, you know, Craig, let me tell you a story. Let me tell you a story about one of the bad hires I made or we made, what it cost us. But more importantly, let me tell you what I learned from it. You know, over the years, we've had many of these stories. And I would always come back after meetings with our internal team, and we'd all discuss these. And I said to my wife many times, there's a book here. These are really interesting stories. And we talked about this. And then the pandemic hit, and our business went, John, from going 160 miles an hour down the highway to literally overnight. Our business, the brakes were slammed. Clients didn't go away. They just didn't know what to do. So everything stopped. So I said to my wife, you know, we got some time here. I'm going to write this book. So we packed things up, went to the cottage for a couple months, and our book's written, there's 50 stories in there with 50 business executives from all over North America, some over in Europe. And I started making calls did the interviews, wrote the book, and we published it. So that's kind of the skinny on writing the book. It was and a really great. I believe that everyone has a book in them, one or two, and I'm just in the midst of starting another one as well.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And I think your situation during the pandemic is not unique. Many people felt the same thing, the same strain, the same challenge, but also, you know, one of the benefits of it amidst the challenges, the economic challenges and everything, is time, right? And the opportunity to evaluate and to reset and to do things perhaps maybe you've been putting off. And so I certainly experienced some of that myself. And I know many others who have done the same. And in fact, this podcast was really a result of the pandemic. I was just looking at, I'm not traveling anymore. So I have a little bit more time. I'm going to have fun conversations with people and put out a podcast. And it's been a blast to do. So I think that's great that you took that approach even amidst some of the adversity and the challenges that you were facing.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's get into the crux of this book, My Worst Hire and What I Learned From It. You interviewed a whole bunch of executives, you tell their stories, and there, unfortunately, we all have those stories, don't we? We all have those stories of really horrible hires that look great, either on paper or they interview super well, but they just don't pan out. They don't work out at all. They don't fit the organization. They just, for a variety of reasons, it doesn't work. And it is super expensive in terms of just all the cost of hiring a new person and getting them up to speed, but then having someone who doesn't actually collaborate and work well with the team and all of the sunk costs and productivity losses and all of that just leads to this tremendous loss for an organization for every poor hire. And most organizations have a whole lot of poor hires that under their belt.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Are there a couple of the stories from your book that maybe highlight and illustrate this kind of challenge?
Well, I'm going to say almost everyone does. And I'm going to come back, John, to what you said. What's really interesting, as we spent time with these different decision makers, majority of them had a hard time kind of picking out which story they want to tell us. But and some of them, you know, are funny, some are sad, and some are pretty scary with regards to the decisions. And you're absolutely correct. Organizations make bad hires all the time. The first story in the book by a fellow by the name of Jim Lawson, a well-known guy, a fellow here in Canada, CEO of some major organizations, talks about hiring a CEO when he was on the board of a significant organization. And the stories in the book are really short. And they were designed that way. It's sort of more like Soup for the Soul books, where you could get through a story and get to the hiring nugget. Every story has a nugget with it, a learning point. But in Jim's case, they were hiring a CEO, absolutely critical that they made the right hire for many reasons. And the organization was going through some significant challenges. And the board actually mandated that they hire someone from within their industry. And that was kind of the key thing they were looking for, industry experience. But what they realized after they made the hire was that they were looking for the wrong thing. Industry experience, and what Jim talks about in his story, it was not the critical component. Because what they ended up hiring is they ended up hiring an individual who had only managed through sort of the ups of the business, growing businesses, never managed through significant challenges. And that was not brought up because everyone was kind of so excited about talking to candidates who were within the industry, who people knew, and they never got to kind of the did they deal and can they deal in challenging times. Hired the CEO and came in, and within 3 months realized that they had made a significant mistake because the the candidate who had been hired had never been in those waters before, and was swimming against the tide and having a significant challenge, lost credibility immediately with senior management team, and had to make a change within the 6 months. But you know, it's not only the cost to the organization, but as Jim said, one of the biggest costs to him as being on the board and to the senior management of the company is the credibility of everyone looking at the board going, you missed this point. The person had never actually dealt in some of the issues that we're dealing with. And so that is probably the first story in the book, but you know, we have other stories. We have a fellow, Matt Regan, who's just a young, probably one of the top realtors in North America, runs a significant real estate company. And he was hiring a salesperson, and the salesperson that came to his attention was someone that he had actually heard about in the past and knew from his past that she came with some rough edges, but was a very good salesperson. So he let his guard down, did really not much of an interview, brought this individual on, and she became his number one salesperson. However, no one in the organization wanted to deal with her, including Matt. And Matt knew he had a problem was when he kind of checked to see who was in the office before he showed up. But the learning point with this and what Matt talks about was that he let this go for about a year, year and a half, because she was a superstar, a sales superstar. And his concern was the financial loss of letting her go. But what he didn't realize was what was happening and the impact in the organization of this individual in the sense of the fit and the culture within the organization. When he finally made the decision to let this individual go, what he realized 6 months later is not only did he not lose on the revenue, but actually the organization picked up revenue. So there's many, like there's, the stories are all over the place, and there's senior hires there. We have hires in here that are executive assistants and the impact of making a mistake at the executive assistant side and all that comes with that. So,
yeah. And so you highlight, of course, there's the cost involved of going through the hiring process and getting somebody up to speed and the learning curve and all of those things. And there's also the cost involved with just declining productivity as people can't collaborate and work effectively together. But there's the intangibles around credibility. There's the intangibles around trust, the overall team dynamics and the culture of the organization that can be impacted heavily by individuals like you described, and ultimately it can be devastating to an organization. Now, it sounds like, in your first example, to their credit, they did recognize it. They did make the change within 3 months. Of course, that shreds your credibility, but at least you're able to make a course correction. Whereas in the second story, it went on for a year and a half before they're able to make a change. And so a lot of those impacts are already, you know, taking hold. So the point is, you know, we want to make better hires in the first place. If we make a poor hire, we need to recognize it quickly and course correct so that we can minimize the negative impact. But how do we go about making better hires in the first place? Because it is such a hard thing. And I truly believe it's kind of this art, this hopefully a science-informed, data-driven art. And so many people just leave the data-informed science piece off. Absolutely. and so they just end up making a whole bunch of really poor decisions.
I'm excited to announce the publication of my new book from HCI Press, Bluer Than Indigo Leadership: The Journey of Becoming a Truly Remarkable Leader. Early in my adult life, I learned about an Asian proverb that translates as bluer than indigo. If you think about the color indigo, It is a brilliant, deep, and vibrant blue. What some would call the bluest of blues. To have something that is bluer than indigo is rare and truly remarkable. Contrary to popular myth, there is no one-size-fits-all or cookie-cutter approach to effective leadership. There's no silver bullet, no secret sauce, no go-to model that will solve all of our problems. The truth is, great leaders have all had their unique strengths and flaws, and have all had to discover and then pave their own distinctive path in their life's journey to fulfill their leadership potential. Bluer than Indigo leadership will help you discover your own path and explore those ordinary, everyday actions that will help you respond to an uncertain future and produce extraordinary results for individuals, teams, and organizations.
Well, John, you're absolutely correct. I would say the main reason over the years, I've been in this business for a long time, and we've worked with, you know, and that's kind of the key component of our hiring simulations and why we design the hiring simulations. But emotion is your enemy. It's the one that has to be checked with regards to hiring. Because we have a very difficult time parking the emotion, liking or disliking, or making a judgment too quickly. Liking someone too quickly, and what we end up doing consciously or subconsciously is selling the candidate on the opportunity. So we go from discovery mode of going deep and trying to understand who that candidate is to consciously or subconsciously trying to sell that candidate on the opportunity. So you now have this emotional element that is overplaying logic. And the way you deal with logic is through numbers and through data. And the more data you have, the more time you take, the better you understand the candidate. But we have story after story after story of clients, if it wasn't for the hiring simulations, would have hired a candidate because they were looking at them emotionally. So our whole business is about helping the client as much as possible park the emotion and move into logic as much as possible. You'll never get rid of the emotion, and emotion's important, yeah. But you really have to counterbalance it with logic, with data.
Yeah, and maybe I can just add to that. I think, you know, we're social and emotional animals. Of course, we're going to have emotions involved in decision-making, and to pretend otherwise is silly. Like, you know, we can try to be 100% data-driven. That's never going to happen. So we just need to acknowledge where we're at in relation to our biases, right? And that's the biggest thing I see when it comes to the emotional aspect. Or hiring on your gut or your intuition is usually that's code speak to just kind of give you a pass for your implicit biases to take hold. Confirmation bias, you end up looking for the data that supports the decision you want to make. Absolutely. And ignoring the red flags that contradict what you want to do. Those sorts of things play out all the time. So we need to be fully aware of the logical fallacies and the biases that can impact the way we make our decisions. And if we are, then yeah, we need to pay attention to what we're feeling and why. And if we're really in tune to ourselves, I believe that we can pick up on certain things that perhaps we're not picking up on in whatever form of data collection we're doing in relation to a decision. But if we're not really thoughtful about it and really careful about it, all we're going to end up doing is having our implicit biases drive our decision-making.
100%. Absolutely. Yeah. And you can understand that. We kind of naturally gravitate to it. It's, you know, John, we have a story I tell when we first started the business 19 years ago, when we started these hiring simulations. I'll be honest with you. I started the business really not knowing anything about hiring simulations. I just knew the concept made sense because I ran a company beforehand. We had 9 offices. We were in the recruitment world, and we were just having a lot of difficult times of clients calling back saying, "Hey, listen, we hired Mary, we hired Peter, and boy, what we saw in the interview and what we had have on the job are very different." And I was at the cottage talking to our neighbor who's an airline pilot, telling him of the problems that we were having in our 9 offices. And he looked at me, he says, "You know, Craig, in the airline business, when we're hiring an airline pilot and someone shows up looking like an airline pilot and talking like an airline pilot in the interview," he says, "we don't give them the keys to fly the plane. He says, we actually take them down the hall to a flight simulator and say, 'Hey, you know what you just told us? In this safe but realistic environment, why don't you just show us what you just told us?'" And I looked at him, I said, "That just makes total sense." So I left my partnership and started this business from scratch, having no idea if it would work. And we landed our first client very quickly. And our second client, and the CEO had heard from this other CEO of what we were doing, called us in, but the vice president of sales was not sold on this. And long story short, they had brought in a candidate they wanted to run through the simulation. So we designed some simulations, and I met the candidate in the lobby. And I'm going to tell you, this candidate was the picture perfect candidate for the role. From a visual perspective, they were perfect. They looked the part, they talked the part. And I went and we sat into the simulation with this candidate and the vice president and her team. Halfway through the simulation, the vice president turned and looked at me. Remember, this is my second client. Turned and looked at me while the simulation was going on, looked at me and gave me this 10 second stare, and then turned away. And at the end of the simulation, so when the candidate left, the vice president came in, she looked at me, she says, "Craig, now I understand what you're selling." And I'm saying to myself, okay, this is my second client. Like, what am I selling? And she said, "Craig, when I met that candidate out in the lobby, in my mind, she was the perfect candidate for me. What I just experienced in the simulation, not a fit." She said,
"Well,
you just saved me a bad hire."
Yeah. And it speaks to the importance of whether it's a simulation or looking at portfolios or work samples, or like having some sort of evidence of actual behavior and performance is going to be very, very important. And in the hiring world, you know, I'm in academia as well as doing consulting work. And in the research around hiring, one thing is incredibly clear. The interview is the worst possible way to make a good hiring decision.
Absolutely.
Yet it's the main way that people make decisions usually, right? And the research also shows, you know, in the past, people used to talk about the 10 second rule. You walk in the office, within 10 seconds, they make a decision. Well, right now we know it's just a fraction of a second. It's a split second that you walk in and people make their initial judgment, and then everything else gets filtered through that initial judgment. 100%. And all the biases play in. And then that's why you see someone who, you know, they look the part, they say the right things, and they end up getting the position, even though they're going to be quite horrible at it. And so we have to invest in, whether it's these simulations, whether it's in other hiring samples, or taking the time to assess those hiring samples, or taking time to have people, you know, in group interviews and settings that mimic what they're going to be doing on the job. Unless you can do those sorts of things, you never really know. It's a complete crapshoot otherwise. Sure. and you just hope that it's going to work out.
Absolutely. We always say, and very much what you said, John, the hiring process in most companies is broken, and it all stems from the interview. 100%. And again, I could spend an hour talking specifically about that one topic. But one of the things that we have to also remember, two things is, and it has to do with the candidate. Number one is that you're dealing with people's lives here. You have a candidate coming to your office who's 35 years old, 3 young kids at home, has a mortgage, whatever. If that individual makes a bad decision because of maybe what you've sold them on, or you have not, as a client, done your due diligence, and they come in and they make a mistake, it's not going to just affect them financially. You could affect their marriage. you can affect them emotionally. I mean, it goes on and on and on the impact that you can have on our candidates. So we always say to our clients, look, you have to understand that you're paying a lot of money for our hiring simulation assessments, but you have to also understand that the way of working here is that we are as much on the candidate side as on your side. We want the candidate to look under the covers. We always say to the candidate, look, there's no perfect client. And we say to the client, there's no perfect candidate. Let's show our warts now rather than later. Let's understand, because there's not going to be a perfect, but my other point about the candidate is that a lot of the good candidates are average at best interviewers. They're average at best. And some of these candidates haven't been on an interview for 10 years. Now, be concerned about candidates who have had five jobs in the last 10 years or whatever, because they've been on a lot of interviews and they've probably been practicing. But there's a lot of candidates out there, and it even is multiplied on the sales side, because there's a lot of statistics out there right now that say that some of your best salespeople are borderline introverts. Some of your best salespeople, meaning that they're introspective, they think, they really digest information before they speak. They're investigative, compared to just, you know, running off their mouth and like what you would think of a typical salesperson coming in and selling. So if you're hiring for a senior level salesperson and the person comes in and doesn't quote wow you, a lot of these sales directors are dismissing them rather than really understanding who these people are. If you ask me, some of the worst hiring decisions are the people that you didn't hire.
Well, Craig, it has just been a pleasure. I note the time and I need to let you go here in just a moment. But before we close, I want to give you a chance to share with listeners how they can get connected with you and find out more about your work, your team, and then give us a final word on the topic for today.
Yeah, so we're based in Toronto, but we do a significant amount of work in the United States, all over North America, some over in Europe. But we have two websites, but probably the best one is at hiringsimulation.com, just as it sounds. And it's Craig at hiringsimulation.com. But you can check us out on our website. But I would say that, and it comes, John, maybe the last word on here is that, and it really plays into what we were just talking about, and that is that there needs to be a way to level the playing field for candidates and clients, where you help candidates really understand what they're getting into, what they're involved in, really understanding maybe some of the personalities and the mindsets of the team that they're going to be working with, at the same time allowing the client to understand how candidates think strategically and tactically, and how that comes together. You cannot find that through an interview, and you won't find that through references either. You'll really find it when you spend time together in some activities that allow individuals to understand how both parties think and how they engage.
Well said. Well, Craig, it has been a pleasure. I encourage listeners to reach out, get connected, find out more about what Craig and his team can do for you. And as always, I hope everyone can stay healthy and safe, that you can find meaning and purpose at work each and every day. And I hope you all have a great week. The alchemy of truly remarkable leadership. Ordinary, everyday actions that produce extraordinary results. Consider how the nature of work has shifted over the past 50 years. With increased globalization, rapid technological advancement, and the shift in economic composition, the average job of today looks very different than the average job of 50 years ago. What will the jobs and organizations of tomorrow look like? Moreover, what does this all mean for organizational leaders? What are the core competencies and capabilities of organizations and their leadership that are prepared for continued disruption and geopolitical and socioeconomic shifts? Regardless of what the future holds, increasingly, leaders need to be socially minded, data-driven, decisive, champions of talent, and disruptors of the traditional notions of leadership, teams, organizations, and work.
The Alchemy of Truly Remarkable Leadership will help you to explore your own leadership competencies and capabilities and consider ways to apply and implement them into your workplace and personal life. Check out Human Capital Innovations magazine, Human Capital Leadership. Human Capital Leadership is a free, interactive e-magazine with the mission to help individuals, leaders, and organizations find innovative approaches to maximize their human capital potential. We publish issues quarterly in August, November, February, and May. Take a look at the latest issue and let us know what you think. Thanks again for joining us for this episode of the Human Capital Innovations Podcast. I hope you stay healthy and safe, and that you have a great week.